paper 9, section 4. It's old single column, page 102. Okay, so as you just glance at these next three sections, you see we're finally getting to the absoluteness of it all. Each of the three sources and centers, personal sources and centers, are a particular absolute. The Father is the volitional absolute, or the anchor point of the personality circuit, anchor point of personality gravity. And the other absolutes are likewise an anchor point for a particular flavor of gravity, the absolute spirit in the case of the second source and center, and now we have the absolute mind in the case of the third source and center. And of course, we'll get to the paradise source and center in a couple papers here, or three papers or so. So let's just see. I don't think there's anything that we need to really do up front, other than just a reminder as we're going into this, the title of this section, The Absolute Mind. If you're being very specific about using, that as a proper designation, with a capital A and a capital M, the absolute mind, so it's a name for a being, you're really thinking more specifically of the conjoint actor. Now, the creator, personal side of the synthesis that is the third source and center. So the conjoint actor is the absolute mind, just like the eternal Son is the absolute spirit. If you're talking about the infinite mind, very precisely, that's really more, when you're thinking of the whole cosmos infinite, you're not just thinking of the aisle or of the central universe, you're really spreading things out to infinity. That sort of infinite presence, in terms of a personal fact, that's more the infinite mother spirit. Yeah. But in terms of this anchor point that's right there with the aisle as an anchor, that's the conjoint actor there in the center of the aisle, the absolute mind. All right.
For the absolute mind, there is an intellectual nature of the third source and center that is distinct from his physical and spiritual attributes. Such a nature is hardly contactable, but it is associable, intellectually, though not personally. It is distinguishable from the physical attributes and the spiritual character of the third person on mind levels of function, but to the discernment of personalities, this nature never functions independently of physical or spiritual manifestations.
Okay, let's spend a little time just making sure we note how they're setting things up with a lot of precision there. So they start out. We're actually going to be thinking about this fact of the absolute mind, or the mind of the conjoint actor. And if such a nature is hardly contactable, but it is associable. I mean, one simple way to just appreciate that idea is, we always point out if you have, when we're talking about this threefold actuality, this threefold energy system of matter, mind, and spirit, you can very appropriately think of matter and spirit as substances that you could contact. But you don't want to think of mind as a substance that you could contact. You need to just leave it in that more fluid sort of sense of just energy. Okay, so such a nature is hardly contactable. You don't want to think of being able to build bodies for beings out of this and walk up and give them a hug. Okay. And so just like they're saying, it's obviously an energy, and we have mind, for instance, so it's a mind. There can be a mind-to-mind association. And then this whole bit about personality, bringing that in, and you notice that they're twice they reiterate the threefold, physical and spiritual attributes, physical attributes and spiritual character. They're reiterating that. So in the previous one we had the universal manipulator, where we're really thinking very much about the very physically oriented aspect. Of just a pure controller sense of the third source and center. And then, we've had the infinite spirit or the omnipresent spirit. I mean, those sorts of things, the more spiritual aspects. Okay. So if you have that whole threefold nature, physical, mindful, spiritual, there can be a personal harmony that can be engaged person to person. And when you're doing that, like they say, but to the discernment of personalities, this nature never functions independently of physical or spiritual manifestations. So again, it's a really good reminder of, of why, the simple reason of why that statement is true. If you are genuinely engaging something personally, not just imagining that you are, the only thing that you can be engaging is a threefold harmonization. That's the only thing that personality is going to actually engage, in this sense that they're talking about here, being able to, if you try to go out looking with personal eyes for what you can see what you can discern, you're not going to see something that's just matter or just spirit, just mind. You can only see with those harmony viewing eyes something that is genuinely a harmony of those three, a triunity of those three. Okay, so they're just making that, that definitive. So like when you're on the Isle of Paradise, when you as a person discern the person of the conjoint actor, it's in that sense. But long before you're able to achieve that very, very high level of personality discernment, you'll start picking up on the mind presence. So they just wanted to make sure that's really clear. They're working very hard to try to challenge us to have a very high concept of personality, so they never miss an opportunity to really stress that in a new context.
The absolute mind is the mind of the third person. It is inseparable from the personality of God the Spirit. Mind in functioning beings is not separated from energy or spirit or both. Mind is not inherent in energy. Energy is receptive and responsive to mind. Mind can be superimposed upon energy, but consciousness is not inherent in the purely material level. Mind does not have to be added to pure spirit, for spirit is innately conscious and identifying. Spirit is always intelligent, minded in some way. It may be this mind or that mind. It may be pre-mind or super-mind, even spirit mind. But it does the equivalent of thinking and knowing. The insight of spirit transcends, supervenes, and theoretically antedates the consciousness of mind.
Okay, so another little bit of clarifying what they're going to focus on here, in what sense you're thinking of this absolute anchor point. So they're reminding us again of this whole issue that they brought up back when they're talking about the eternal sun. That when you're talking about something that in terms of you know, any direct way of relating to it, you can't think of it as some sort of an individuality, unity, association that needs mind to bridge between the two. Yeah. You know, here you got there saying, you know, this whole bit about minded in some way, for those sorts of things that you would think of as more as purely spirit facts. So they give you some examples. Pre-mind. Okay, what are they referring to there? Something that we know about. Right, the thought adjuster. You call it pre-personal. You know, so they're using a parallel way. You know, it's like, well, we could call that pre-mind. But what it really is this mind that isn't so much bridging the gap between individuality and unity. One example of that. Supermind. That they refer to that back when they're talking about the eternal Son. The example that they pointed out to us that's been revealed. Remember how the eternal Son has very curious offspring that are just solely the offspring of the eternal Son. Very hard for even high beings to understand the nature of these offspring, these pure second source and center offspring. But there was a group of these offspring of the second source and center that were called the superpersonal spirit representatives of the eternal Son, where they were saying, well, we can't really figure out any word to use except superpersonal. Super mind. Okay, so that's an example. Those so-called superpersonal spirit representatives of the eternal Son would be one of the things that they're pointing to there. Again, something that is just a spirit fact in any way anyone can understand it. And even spirit mind, that was the expression that they used. They're just talking about the mindedness of the eternal Son himself. Okay. So just three examples of things that you don't think of in any way as being in the mind circuit of the third source and center. So when we're talking about the absolute mind, we're not going to, we're not, really technically directly dealing with all these things that are in the other category like this. Okay? We're just dealing with things like the mind that we have that are encircuited with this anchor point of the mind of the conjoint actor, the absolute mind. Anything that's sort of beyond that is another story. Okay, so that's the point. Those first two paragraphs are just sort of trying to set the stage a little bit, make sure that it's clear in many ways what we're not talking about. We're not talking about personal. We're not talking about this, this stuff that you might call the insight of spirit or something like that. We're talking about something that you and I can understand. Just the kind of mind that we have, just extrapolate that concept all the way up to the absolute anchor point. That kind of mind.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
No need for associativity with the spirit mind phenomena.
Right. I mean, there's obviously need for consciousness. Yeah. But,
for me, it's another distinction. Consciousness, but
right. Without associativity. Yeah. You just reminded me. I forgot there was one other little curious thing I wanted to mention in there. For spirit is innately conscious and identifying. What do they mean by that? The conscious part we're just talking about. I mean, my consciousness is not in my brain, it's in my mind, in my agitant mind. The other thing that's going on with that agitant mind, that's myself. I have an agitant mind self. And personality is identified to that self, that agitant mind self. Okay, so that's what the identity. So you, in other words, you don't have to have this separate mindal energy system for either consciousness to be or for the fact of a self that personality can identify to when you're talking about these really pure spirit phenomena. They're, the self is innate in the spirit energy system, you know, and the consciousness is in there, is within. Yeah, so that's what they mean by that.
The conjoint creator is absolute only in the domain of mind, in the realms of universal intelligence. The mind of the third source and center is infinite. It utterly transcends the active and functioning mind circuits of the universe of universes. The mind endowment of the seven super universes is derived from the seven master spirits, the primary personalities of the conjoint creator. These master spirits distribute mind to the grand universe as the cosmic mind, and your local universe is pervaded by the Nebadon variant of the Orvantan type of cosmic mind.
See, there's an example. I mean, every once in a while, they'll remind you of the hierarchical, you know, picture very literally. That, you know, when they talk about us engaging cosmic mind here in the local universe, we're not engaging it in the same way that you will as a first stage spirit when you're functioning up in the super universe levels. That cosmic mind womb of the super universe is downstepped, you know, by each creative mother spirit into a localized womb with a particular flavor. Okay, you know, so there's this Nebadon variant, see, of the Orvantan type. So you have the cosmic mind at super universe level, gets downstepped into the local universe by the creative mother spirit, and we've talked about this a number of times. What, in terms of understanding our relationship to that downstepped fact, the more things get downstepped, the more they're trying to engage individuality, and the more likely it is that you're going to experience it not as a singular phenomenon anymore, but as some sort of a faceted or separated phenomena. So that, you know, the real unity core of that cosmic mind just comes right straight down. Because, you know, it's just the unity core. It can't be individuated in any way. So that comes all the way down to us and engages us as what we call the Holy Spirit. You know, and sometimes they'll just speak of that engagement of the Holy Spirit to us as cosmic mind engaging us. You know, but technically it's just that unity core of the cosmic mind that's coming all the way down through this downstepping. And the more it's downstepped, the more there is aspects of that unified cosmic mind at the super universe level that gets separated off. For us as an ascenders, you know, the first thing that you have when you downstep is you have Marantia mind, and then you have the Holy Spirit.
And the more infinite we become in numbers.
Yes, yeah. And of course, you know, it's downstepping because there's more and more, yeah, diversity that it has to engage. You know, so you have Marantia mind. That where your consciousness will be, you'll have a Marantia mindal self, and you'll still have that encirclement in the Holy Spirit, but you downstep it another notch, and now you have the seven adjutants and the Holy Spirit. Yeah. But it's really all, if you collect it all back together again, you have the cosmic mind before it became the Nebadon variant of the Orvantan type. Okay? All right.
Seven types.
Right, so there's seven. You know, initially it's split into seven types, and then it gets split into all the local universes. So there's 700,000 variants, but yeah, all said and done. Yeah, 700,000 different Holy Spirits. Well, and you know, you're trying to really come to terms with, at least in terms of one super universe, with all that variation of mind when you get up to the major sector level. But that's another story.
Isn't it even a little bit further, you know, planet-wide consciousness or the mind that we have on this planet is different from...
But the way that works is, that's bringing in the other endpoint. This, what I was just giving is all what happens from a top-down, downstepping. When it when that agent of mind finally has to engage animals, okay, that agent of mind tunes to, you know, and so, yeah, then you've got a variant from planet to planet, but...
that begins the upward progression from the bottom.
Right, yeah. So you've got to start with the way it's, you know, the adjutants have engaged you here, work your way past those issues, you know, and just keep working up towards unity.
It's because of the mother that we are different than other planets, right?
No? It's just there's so many things. I mean, we're a decimal world. It makes us very different. And, you know, and that really brings in just what Jim was saying. The fact that we have this very, very different kind of biologic foundation that mind is engaging, it means the kind of mindedness on this planet is quite uncommon. Okay? And so you're starting your journey in the universe, you know, towards greater and greater unity, like Gloria was saying, you know, in a very curious little nook of mindedness. So you get to paradise with a quite distinct perspective on things that others have no way to access, you know, because they've never explored such a remote little, you know, nook of mind.
Yeah. Infinite mind ignores time. Ultimate mind transcends time. Cosmic mind is conditioned by time, and so with space. The infinite mind is independent of space, but as descent is made from the infinite to the adjutant levels of mind, intellect must increasingly reckon with the fact and limitations of space.
So, for instance, our adjutant mindal energy system that we're plugged into, what are its spatial limitations? Nevadon. So you're plugged into a mind that is only within the boundaries of Nevadon because it's her mind. You know, you can't get in the spaceship Enterprise, you know, as a mortal right now and go zooming outside of the local universe. You'll come unplugged. You'll go unconscious. You have to reckon with the fact and limitations of space. It's a very definite thing. You will come unplugged. And so don't think about going to the gamma quadrant, you know, with the Borg or anything, because it's just not going to work. All right.
Cosmic force responds to mind, even as cosmic mind responds to spirit. Spirit is divine purpose, and spirit mind is divine purpose in action. Energy is thing, mind is meaning, spirit is value. Even in time and space, mind establishes those relative relationships between energy and spirit which are suggestive of mutual kinship in eternity. Mind transmutes the values of spirit into the meanings of intellect. Volition has power to bring the meanings of mind to fruit in both the material and spiritual domains. The paradise ascent involves a relative and differential growth in spirit, mind, and energy. The personality is the unifier of these components of experiential individuality.
Okay, so you notice how you just, you know, you can see why they broke it into these three blocks. There's sort of three little subjects that they wanted to. So we dealt with the whole issue of getting it downstepped into the local universe and the issues you have to keep in mind there. And then this last little bit, you know, is just all over the chart. You know, especially when they start, you know, saying energy is is thing, mind is meaning, spirit is value. I mean, yeah, just right there. But notice the little points in here. So that whole bit about mind establishes those relative relationships between energy and spirit, which are suggestive of mutual kinship in eternity. There's a spot where they say mind is unity, and they just state it like that. And you're going, well, okay, I thought it was individual associative unity, okay. But in this higher sense, remember we talked about this before. You have to use unity in a lot of different ways. They don't want to coin endless variations on the word unity for all sorts of different things. So you just need to, you know, think about in what sense you mean unity. And notice how they painted the picture here. So mind transmutes the values of spirit into the meanings of intellect. Okay, so you take just the that which literally is unity, spirit, mind. Is directly in contact with that spirit energy, and so unity nature can come down into the mindal energy system from the spiritual energy system. Now mind has unity because of its relationship to that which is unity. And then, like they're saying, now imagine a personality engaging this threefold energy system, and establishing a whole unity to it. And the only reason it can do that, the personality is engaging the mindal self. So that's it's really in the middle there. That mindal self is where the personality is engaging and then reaching out to the individuality and the unity and encompassing the whole system. So one way to think about the truth of that statement, mind is unity, is this way of how it's the doorway, into establishing this full personalized unity. Okay? And like they're saying, that the fact that it works that way reminds you that when you, like for instance, when you get up to the Isle of Paradise, the difference between absolute matter and absolute spirit substance is a difference in name only to any sub-absolute being. I mean, the unity, so imagine putting mind then in between something that doesn't seem to have a gap. I mean, just how much, it's sort of just the embodiment of the fact that you can't even see the gap. That's how much of it. An expression of the unity of it that it is. And that's what they're alluding to, this kinship in eternity, where it is just sort of the expression of the fact that there's no separation between the absolute of matter and absolute spirit in terms of just the substance fact of them. It is that unity of those two. It's also in that sense where we've talked a little bit about this gene. Notice back up here when you read that end of that second paragraph. They're talking about the insight of spirit theoretically antedates the consciousness of mind. That whole notion of thinking about this, where you have the two endpoints, matter and spirit, or individuality and unity, and the mind, the associativity, is the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two. That's what they're saying. Theoretically, you have to have spirit and mind before you can have a relationship between the two and have the super additive consequence in which there can be consciousness. Theoretical antedates the consciousness of mind. Okay? And when we do that, when we think about it in that very deductive way, where we have matter and spirit, and then super additively we have mind. See, in that way of looking at it, it's what's above. And the more above anything is, the more unity it is. It's one way of thinking about it. Like we were just thinking about coming down from the cosmic mind to the super universe and getting more and more individuated as we went down. You know, so that you, so see, depending on how you think about this, you know, there's a lot of different ways to understand about how just much, how much actual unity or how much potential unity there really is to this fact of mind. Because, like in that way, it really is a very transcendent fact and is the means by which it can all be embraced as one. It's the doorway for that encompassment by personality.
Yeah? Well, I wanted you to try to bring that back to your chart right there, because it says right under the fourth number, Spirit of Truth, in quotes,
mm-hmm.
unification.
Right, right, and that, but now, but you know, it,
there's something more to tell you.
Right, I mean, the, you know, in the same sense, you know, kind of that I was talking about the personality, you know, is this unifying influence upon the threefold energy system. You know, not surprisingly, that there's a sense in which you can understand that ministry of the Creator Son as the Spirit of Unification. One of the very direct ways is that it links, no matter where you are, as just a personal self to an adjuster. It's the bridge between time and eternity. It's the unifying mechanism between your animal origin self and an adjuster. So that's one very immediate way that you can understand it as the Spirit of Unification. You can get an adjuster when you're just a seventh circler. But also, the fact that it's in this block, like you're, you know, you're probably thinking here most immediately, that it's in that personality block. You know, and there's a lot of times when you talk about truth in the book, notice if they're, when they speak of truth in a very personal context, so that you really want to visualize beauty and goodness, and then truth being a super additive consequence, and really the point of personality engagement. So a lot of times when truth is used in that very personal way, as really the transcendent thing, as opposed to, you know, sometimes when we want to understand things, we put, you know, we put individuality, associativity, unity like this, and so we put the associativity in the middle. It depends on, see, what you're trying to understand, what aspect you're trying to understand, about which analogy, you know, helps you to understand it. You have to be fluid in using the analogies. Don't carry any one of them too far, because then it'll start to distort the picture. Yeah.
Have we transcended this bridge-type mind by the time that we actually shake hands with the... with the person of the third source and center? And
no, that is the absolute of that bridge-type mind. So you're still very definitively in that mode.
But our spiritual capacity or actuality,
yeah,
which is minded, by then we'll have a whole lot of mindedness, self-minded spirit.
Right, but you're never going to be a pure unity-like phenomenon. The only way that you're ever going to be able to discern the third source and center is when you get to Havona and you're working on the fifth circuit there, you know, trying to get to the point where you can discern the third source and center. You have to have a perfect synthesis of individuality and unity. You can't achieve that with just unity. So,
no, I understand,
you know,
once you get beyond that, accomplish it.
Okay, but let me just describe that. Yeah, so it's a lot like the picture I was saying, where you can understand things by actually putting individuality and unity, and then the associativity or the mind is above it here, and it's the entry point. You know, flip that like this. So I'm coming at this thing, and I come to the point of that triangle first. I come to, you know, try to discern the absolute mind first. That's my doorway into paradise. Okay. I achieve that. I achieve the recognition of that super additive consequence of individuality and unity. They're on the fifth circuit. So then my next challenge on the fourth circuit, now I have to try, so I went through that, now I have to try to definitively recognize the eternal sign, which means I also have to definitively discern the aisle. Okay. So that's your next challenge. And there's a number of times when our experiences here in very lowly form are a downstepped expression of that process, where we recognize that just about every time we talk about the thing that's in this seventh field here, we very seldom write it beauty, truth, goodness. Almost always we write it truth, beauty, goodness. Okay? And just think about, why you put it in that order. Because of this. It's that super additive associative consequence that you engage first as a person. Truth is your doorway into true beauty and true goodness. And as a very much an individuality origin being, if I actually achieve the recognition of truth, the next thing that I'll most likely discern is that which is kind of closest to home, is the most individuality-like, so I get beauty next. And then goodness. So that's why we put them in that order, truth, beauty, goodness. So, very likely, it's going to be just like that in Havona. I'm going to figure out the absolute mind, and then in the process of next trying to be able to get to the absolute spirit, the first thing I'm going to do is get a definitive recognition of the absolute of matter, and then, once I've gotten the aisle out of the way, I can get at the absolute spirit. So we probably, most likely that. It'll just be the same order as we write truth, beauty, and goodness.
That's good. Yeah? The mind is the key to interacting with volition.
Right.
That's our personality.
Right, because it's a mindal self. The personality is identified with the mindal self. It's not identified with the spiritual or the material. It's identified with the mindal self. Okay, that's the doorway in. And then once you have that, like they're saying, okay, now it can do this process I was just saying. It can spread those meanings of mind to the two endpoints, to the material and the spiritual domains. Okay. But in just a simple actuality, energy association, before you're thinking about bringing in personality in this doorway picture, you're just thinking about this threefold actuality, this threefold energy system, and the values that are in spirit energy get down into the mind because that's the direct connection energetically. And then once they're in that self, okay, now personality can engage it and not only manifest those meanings from those values out through individuality, but redound them back to the unity, the spirit, whence they came, so that you become an engine of new values coming into existence that can only come into existence because of your absolutely unique personality. See, so you feed it back into the spiritual energy system, and new values come into existence in the universe that only can come into existence through this process. Because it's the personality is the power behind this production of it's your creativity. You've been given this ability to endow new purposing in the unity of the cosmos. Okay, all right. So that's the picture. Yep.
Why have you been using the term unity or unifying mm-hmm. rather than harmony and harmonizing.
Oh, just because we were kind of going with that. I mean, again, I use the word harmony if I want to really stress that I'm talking about something that got to this unified state by bringing the threefold differential together. I didn't use it right there. Threefold actuality, unity. Okay. When you start to, if you study the way the Revelators do it, you'll notice that they're just, in certain context, it just seems more appropriate to say it a certain way. Here, why is that more appropriate than threefold actuality with harmony? It's just because, as the very first thing that you see is the title of that chart, and you have an immature relationship with all this complexity, the first thing you want to do is remind this child of God that even though you don't, you're feeling a little bit of trepidation about threefold actuality. It's like, wait a minute, things are breaking apart. No, with unity, it's okay. There's still going to be unity. Yeah, and the Revelators do that a lot too. They know when they need to just say unity, so that it sort of reassures the spiritual consciousness that we're not losing something here. It's okay. You're going to keep the spiritual consciousness happy, but we're going to allow the material consciousness to think about the details a little bit. And then once you're a little more mature, you can start, really recognizing that the reality we experience is fundamentally a harmony, like they're just saying here. To the discernment of personalities, this nature never functions independently of physical or spiritual manifestations. Yeah. Once you really become a discerning person, it will be harmonizing selfhood that is what satiates you. The discernment of that. You won't be satisfied with mere spiritual unity anymore. When you see just how beautiful it is when the three come together, you quickly leave behind trying to, make spirit a complete lifestyle solution. But you have to sort of gently work into that.
You're reminding me, one of my all-time favorite quotes, economic necessity binds man to reality.
Yeah.
So if you don't have this stuff, you can't be real.
And see, and just, thinking about, see, the word down here, is a reality. With harmony. I mean, it binds you to reality. I mean, to come to the recognition that that reality that you seek is not purely spiritual. The reality that you're hungering for is something that mankind has never really appreciated. It's this harmonization of these three different things. And the spiritual consciousness's desire to free itself from the shackles of form, takes it away from, that's taking you away from reality, not towards reality. Ask someone who's fully achieved it, like Lucifer, okay? The more you take your spiritual consciousness and put greater and greater distance between it and form, the less real you become until you become totally unreal. So it's very, and so that's, that's why the angels of the churches don't have checks, let alone checkmates. But the angels of progress don't just have checks, they have checkmates. The angels of the churches are the checkmates of the angels of progress. Because you can't let things get too far from form because it becomes unreal. Have to keep it within, stay between the lines. The lines are your friend, like the old commercial went. Okay?
I think Jesus just sums up perfectly what you said there on teachings about prayer and worship. He says worship, contemplation of the spiritual, must, another must, alternate with service, comma, contact with material reality.
The cosmic fruits of the Spirit, right? It's not just love, it's loving service. You can't do it with just unity. You have to bring unity and individuality together. Okay, one more little bit, and then let's keep going here.
Yeah, well, I mean, with it being called sacred or self-evident, you could think of it as also being cosmically evident. What if that was a...
Right, sacred is a spirit word. Self-evident is a cosmic word. You don't want to just, go around, sacratizing everything, sanctifying everything, whatnot, Okay. All right. So let's get a little bit of the ministry of mind. Now that you see that he just used the heading of the absolute mind to really talk about the nature of mind, to just really talk about the facts of it. So it's clear before you start talking about ministering this, what exactly are you ministering? Got that out of the way first.
5, the ministry of mind. The third source and center is infinite in mind. If the universe should grow to infinity, still his mind potential would be adequate to endow limitless numbers of creatures with suitable minds and other prerequisites of intellect.
See how you're thinking of the infinite mind as a reservoir there, because it's got the infinite adjective.
In the domain of created mind, the third person with his coordinate and subordinate associates rules supreme. The realms of creature mind are of exclusive origin and the third source and center. He is the bestower of mind. Even the father fragments find it impossible to indwell the minds of men until the way has been properly prepared for them by the mind action and spiritual function of the infinite spirit.
Okay, so let's remind ourselves of that. We've talked about that many times, but they're just stating it directly, so let's re-understand it. We have to downstep of the infinite spirit. It has to get downstepped into a creative spirit and down into our local universe. And then there's going to be a mind action and a spiritual function. Okay, so think about yourself. Creative Mother Spirit properly preparing you. How does she properly prepare you with something called the mind action? What aspect are we talking about there? Yeah, giving you engaging you with the adjutants. So that comes first. The action of the mind engaging you one adjutant at a time until you have all 7. And then spiritual function. What's that? All right, the Holy Spirit. Then you're encircled in the Holy Spirit. So once you've got built all the way up through the adjutants and then encircled in the Holy Spirit, then and only then are you properly prepared, and an adjuster can come. Like we said, the simplest way to understand that, you have to build all the way up to the point where you can encircle, do this spiritual function thing, and encirclement in the Holy Spirit, because then and only then do you acquire this this aspect of your nature, your new personal nature, called capacity. Literally, there's this, coming down from the infinite capacity, you receive a little measure of this fact, this aspect of deity likeness called capacity, a literal domain that an adjuster can be in. An adjuster has to have a house to dwell in. There has to be a citadel in the mind. There can't just be a mind. A citadel has to be built in the mind, a temple the temple within. Then and only then can the jester come. It's all very literal. And they're just trying to remind you that. And so even though, like we said, a father fragment with this quote-unquote pre-mind or whatever you want to call it, you know, the consciousness of that adjuster self, even though that mind is not in the conjoint actor's mindal circuit, you know, look at the dependence. That doesn't mean that it can just do anything. It has to engage a mindal self, and there are definitive facts that have to be in place. They're just reminding you that they're not allowing you to have any sort of magical thinking here. This is literal energy. It has very definite laws and characters.
The point of the Pentecost, fairly close to 100% of the population, basically automatically gets a thought adjuster.
Right.
So all of those prerequisites are all of us from that point and just given all of those via grace. It's just...
Just
automatic at this point because...
You still have to... Those prerequisites are still in place. It's, you know, you still don't get an adjuster until roughly age 6. Because it's not until roughly age 6 that the seventh adjutant makes contact. Right. So that, and it's not until then that there's a Holy Spirit in circumvent until there's a capacity. So that doesn't change. You know, that's just facts. The difference now is... there's another prerequisite, that they're not talking about here. Because we're not talking, you go up to the prerequisites of adjuster indwelling, okay, then you get the rest of the story. I mean, there's another issue in play. That capacity can't be empty. Because the adjuster has to go into something. Remember, it's not next to your mind. It actually goes to go into. Well, it can't go into this adjutant stuff down here, or we wouldn't even need to be talking about the Holy Spirit and the capacity and everything. So what is it that you have to fill this domain with that it goes into?
Yeah.
Well, the soul is actually to the side. There's another gift. Remember, we've talked about this. That encirclement in the Holy Spirit, it's just exactly that. It's an encirclement. There's a thread of something that you've acquired by grace alone, from the creative Mother Spirit. You aren't given an empty volume, which of course is nothing in the universe is empty. Everything is pervaded by something. This new space that's created can't be empty. It has to be pervaded by something. It has to be pervaded with a little thin, the thinnest measure possible of supremacy. Because, you remember from the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart, normally the adjusters can't come until you're a third circler. You're on the supreme level here. They can only go into a measure of supremacy. And so, the creative Mother Spirit has to give you that. That's that initial measure of supreme selfhood. Not only so that the adjuster can come, but also that's what the personality is engaging. The personality is not engaging. Just the raw adjutant animal origin nature. Okay? The personality is a fact that's existential. It has this constancy to it. It's changeless. It's a changeless like thing. So it can only engage other changeless like things. It takes two hands of God to make this happen. One has to lay out this initial thread of changeless substrate, And then the Father can strike step with that. And so both the Mother and the Father are involved in this. Okay? And like we talked about, I mean, the fact that you've got that initial thread, go totally before Pentecost. There's this little thread of supremacy. It's up there in a domain that if you're pretty primitive, you're not going to find it. But if you have a moment where you really get out of your way, have this transcendent moment of clarity, it's brought on by some external stimulus that's really focusing you, it's got your attention, and you can make a supreme decision. You can actually grab a hold of that thread of supremacy. If you weren't given that, it would be impossible to make a supreme decision. You can't manufacture supremacy within you and then grab a hold of it. You're not a creator being. You have to be given the potential to make a supreme decision. Even the supreme decision, where when you're grabbing a hold of that, it's in relation to the choice of eternity. You know, there's supreme decisions and then there's the supreme decision. You know, and like they said, I mean, if that'll get you an adjuster. If you make the supreme decision, that's equivalent to getting yourself up to third circular status as far as the adjuster is concerned. And the adjuster can come and put itself into that supreme decision. Because remember, a decision is not an abstraction. It's a literal energy form in your mind. And it infuses itself into that. So that's kind of, but all that stuff is in play. You know, just when they give you these sorts of statements, make sure that you can understand them very literally, factually, methodically, deductively. And once you get that factual foundation, then the truth will start to flow in the book much more freely. But if the fact points are not held yet, it's hard for you to pick up on what they're trying to flow through that passage. So make sure that you really engage your individuality consciousness to precisely what they're referring to, and then feel what flows through that. What does that allow me to now understand that I've got the coordinated essential knowledge? What truth can be revealed to me now? If you don't coordinate the essential knowledge of this sentence, truth can't flow through it. They've given you what you need. You just got to combine this with everything that you've learned in the rest of the book, put it all together, get this definitive picture.
The unique feature of mind is that it can be bestowed upon such a wide range of life. Through his creative and creature associates, the third source and center ministers to all minds on all spheres. He ministers to human and subhuman intellect through the adjutants of the local universes and through the agency of the physical controllers, ministers even to the lowest non-experiencing entities of the most primitive types of living things. And always is the direction of mind a ministry of mind-spirit or mind-energy personalities.
Universe is, that whole bit about, mind made and personality managed, and of course there's a personality, that's a mind that's ministering and administering. Okay, they've just repeated it again. Let me make sure everyone is picking this up. So the first thing they said in the second paragraph was that the third person with his coordinate and subordinate associates. And then here they said through his creative and creature associates. Okay. So who are the primary coordinate and creative associates of the third source and center?
Creator.
angels?
No. They're not creators.
Oh, creators. I thought you said
Yeah. What? Yeah, the creative mother spirits. Okay? Those are coordinate. You know, they're of the order of a creator being, like the third person. So they're coordinate in, they're a creator being. Okay, so the coordinate creative, that's the creative mother spirits. So the creature subordinate associates are now, Sydney.
The angels.
Yeah, the angels. Right. There's the creative daughters and there's the non-creative daughters. Okay. Two types of daughters. Yeah, and obviously we're really talking about the infinite mother spirit here. Okay.
And we're not saying angels aren't creative either, right?
Well, they have creativity. They're persons, but they're not creative like a creative mother spirit. They're not a creator being.
They've got some good ideas, though.
Yeah. I have personal creativity, but I'm not a creator being.
Right. They're creative.
Okay. I can do unique things with stuff that's already given to me. I can't make the stuff and then do something with it. I have no ability to bring stuff out of potentials. Okay? Yeah, someone has to give me matter, someone has to give me mind, someone has to, you know, everything. You've got to give me everything. I'm just a creature. Okay, and then the one other little thing in there, you know, notice they reminded us of just how broad a fact of mind is here. You know, not only are you talking about human and subhuman, i.e., you know, human and just animal, okay, you know, salamander or whatever, okay, but ministers even to the lowest non-experiencing entities of the most primitive types of living things.
Right.
Plants, prokaryotes, you know, I mean, yeah, even going all the way down to bacteria. Like, yeah, I mean, he took it all the way, see? Yeah. I mean, the third source and center is behind all of this. You know, it may get downstepped a very long way and start to get separated. You know, when you downstep all the way to mechanical mind, notice a further separation occurred. Now the immediate minister is not even the creative mother spirit. You know, it's gotten separated off to the mechanical controllers. Okay, you know, farther you go down, the more it goes laterally too. Okay. You know, so think about the adjutants in that picture. You know, if you have it all together as Marantia mind, you downstep it into the adjutants. Which adjutant is the closest to the Holy Spirit, and which is farthest? 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then non-teachable mind. Yeah. So, and the same time that sometimes you would visualize that vertically, you can also visualize it horizontally there, moving away from the Holy Spirit core of the cosmic mind. You know, and when it gets that far removed that it's out to the non-experiencing, you know, entities, not even the creative mother spirit can reach that far away from the core. She has to hand that off, you know. I mean, it literally is directly ministered by an impersonal entity, a mechanical controller.
Does the association of mind and consciousness is semi-obvious, but here we're talking about the association of mind and living.
We haven't brought it. You know, remember, there's always that additional element that, even when you're talking about a bacteria, you know, a prokaryote, it's that mechanical mind is not directly engaging the molecules. It can't engage dead matter. Mind can't, no matter how mechanical it is, it can't engage dead matter. To that dead matter, life animation has to be added first. It has to be living matter.
So that life animation, is that coming from mind or spirit?
Neither. Yeah. That's a whole separate thing.
I figured.
Right. I mean, technically, the reservoir is the infinite. So it's, and that's a separate fact, and it's such a rarefied fact. It's kind of in the same, you know, domain as personality, where it's not appropriate to think of personality as an energy or a force, or, you know, it's not a thing in that sort of substantive sense at all. Life animation is the same way. I mean, it's a very, very subtle, rarefied fact that's added to the system. Yeah. Okay. And maybe just one other thing to think about that, you know, as long as you brought that in. Notice, you know, you have these two rarefied ones, and where are they? At the very top and the very bottom. I mean, it's all sitting on matter, okay. But in terms of this whole mindal spiritual energy system, see, the, you know, that's on the two endpoints. You know, and this subtle one connects you to deity, and this subtle one connects you to the aisle, the matter.
Is that what they mean by the direction of mind?
Oh, the direction of mind. Oh, that, let's see. Is that where I see? I think I actually... here it is. I found it. It's in section 11 of paper 42, the second paragraph. See, mechanisms do not absolutely dominate the total creation. The universe of universes in toto is mind planned, mind made, and mind administered. Okay, that's what they're referring to here. And always is the direction of mind ministry, of mind spirit or mind energy personalities. You know, the whole universe is mind planned, mind made, and mind administered. And it's, you know, this is the mind that's engaged spirit or energies and personalized. You know, so it's a combination of that statement. And like I said, the one that's up there in, what is that, paper 3 or, you know, the one where it's the universe is mind made and personality managed.
In toto. Can you define that in toto?
In totality. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So not you know, just you know, throwing in that reminder, you know, that we you know, they're getting pretty deep into all this stuff about mind, and you might be starting to think, wow, this mind energy is really cool stuff. It kind of just you know, why do you even need God or anything? You know, it just, the universe just runs itself with this mindal energy in play. So yeah, let's read a little further.
Since the third person of deity is the source of mind, it is quite natural that the evolutionary will creatures find it easier to form comprehensible concepts of the infinite spirit than they do of either the eternal Son or the universal Father. The reality of the conjoint creator is disclosed imperfectly in the very existence of human mind. The conjoint creator is the ancestor of the cosmic mind, and the mind of man is an individualized circuit, an impersonal portion of that cosmic mind as it is bestowed in a local universe by a creative daughter of the third source and center. Because the third person is the source of mind, do not presume to reckon that all phenomena of mind are divine.
It's almost like we knew that was coming.
Why do we need
it? Human intellect is rooted in the material origin of the animal races. Universe intelligence is no more a true revelation of God, who is mind, than is physical nature a true revelation of the beauty and harmony of paradise. Perfection is in nature, but nature is not perfect. The conjoint creator is the source of mind, but mind is not the conjoint creator. Mind on Urantia is a compromise between the essence of thought perfection and the evolving mentality of your immature human nature. The plan for your intellectual evolution is, indeed, one of sublime perfection, but you are far short of that divine goal as you function in the tabernacles of the flesh. Mind is truly of divine origin, and it does have a divine destiny, but your mortal minds are not yet of divine dignity. All too often, you mar your minds by insincerity and sear them with unrighteousness. You subject them to animal fear and distort them by useless anxiety. Therefore, though the source of mind is divine, mind as you know it is on your world of ascension, can hardly become the object of great admiration, much less of adoration or worship. The contemplation of the immature and inactive human intellect should lead only to reactions of humility.
Immature and inactive.
It's sad to record, Sophia. That's the inactive. Okay. Okay, so. It needs to just be read. It's all one statement fleshed out in many sentences just to make sure that you get it. You know, don't fall into this trap. When we bring this up all the time, of course. Any objective contemplation of your consciousness should lead only to reactions of humility. Okay? Or said, like you hear me often say it, why are you interested in what you think? Why on earth are you interested in what you think? What would possibly be admirable, compelling about it? Okay? That's the glory of the revelation. If you get to the point where this finally sinks in, it's like, wow, I'd love to be able to do something with my mind, but all I've got is my mind. If only there was some way to transcend this thing that's just nothing but a catalyst for humility. That's the majesty of the revelation. Finally, I've got something. I don't have to try to do something with what I think. Especially when I finally recognize that that is just a completely pointless, useless, worthless thing to do. Because it's nothing. Yeah, I can finally challenge myself to take the form of the thought in the revelation. I can put something in there that without creator, the help of a creator, you can't get in there. Yeah? This allows there to be something in here that's worthy of more than a passing notice. Okay. But unfortunately, there's humans that just spend their whole conscious life playing around with this, interesting thing that's between their ears, looking for patterns in it and trying to make meaning out of that, and it's got this facet and that facet, and and your facets are different. It's all irrelevant. It doesn't mean anything.
Kind of a navel gazing.
Right. It's just going to get you to introspection and self glorification. Or self calcification. If you start thinking, you finally figure out, you study this subjective pattern, and you finally figure out what its shape is, and you go, oh, I'm a such and so shape forevermore. Yeah. No. See, now you've just taken yourself out of the game. The moment you think you are, what you finally pin down is the shape of that subjective self, is the moment that you just unplug from any potential. That is nothing. It doesn't matter if you've got 25 equations now describing it. It's still nothing. You know, it's what you need to transcend. It's what you perforce must somehow deal with in trying to get to paradise. You know, it's nothing that's worthy of admiration, let alone adoration or worship.
Well, what do you think about this whole thing of Watson and Crick when he had a dream of a serpent making a circle to come up?
Again, that's a separate issue. That, okay, that's, you know, the guys that, you know, figured out DNA. I mean, well, I mean, any sort of thing like that, those aha sorts of things or whatever. I mean, those are little auto-revelatory flashes. Okay?
And arrive at getting something like that.
Right, but see, that's a different thing. It's one thing to go, wait a minute, that wasn't just me thinking. That was something different, I'm pretty sure. Now, of course, this gets really dicey because you can start being delusional and you can start falsely exalting all these things. And, oh, that wasn't just something I thought. That was divine revelation. You know, we all know how dicey this is. That's the problem with auto-revelation. I mean, they didn't even try to get this to us by auto-revelation. It's so dicey. But it's possible. You can get a little flash of insight, especially now post-Pentecost with the adjuster trying to catalyze that process a little bit. But, you know, remember what they say. I mean, the adjuster does some careful thing and lays it out there, and you twist it into some mess, okay, because of what they just said here. Too often, all too often, okay, you're disrupting the mind energy system from both ends. First, they address the top-down. Top-down marring of the mind, or disruption of the mind, I mean. You can mar your mind by insincerity. In other words, evil. You know, insincerity, lack of purity, lack of unity. You can mar your mind by, unwittingly establishing a relationship of that mind to disunity, evil. Or, you know, even worse, you can sear it with sin. Okay, so that's top-down messing up the mind. Taking it away from what, like I said, you know, it's supposed to be this gateway to unity. Mind is unity. Okay, and this is taking it away. This is anything that would produce any sort of disunity, either from the top-down or the bottom-up. Yeah, first level of meaning is directly in contact with the zeroth level of meaning, the level of fear. So you can bring fear up, you know, up into the mind, just distort it all up, you know, or anxiety. And just to make sure it's clear, it's useless anxiety. It's always useless anxiety. Anxiety is never useful, okay? Any anxiety twists the mind, you know, they literally use the word distort, you know, severely twist is what that means literally, okay? And it makes it a domain where nothing of value can be. If you're pumping anxiety up into the mental energy system, you can forget about this thing called harmony. You can forget about adjuster connecting. You can forget about the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth. Anything doing anything with you, okay? It can't do anything when you twist on the mind like that. Okay, you know, they're all just going, okay, well, we'll wait. Maybe, you know, she'll let go. Whatever. There's nothing can be done. We progress in spite of ourselves. we've managed to advance because even with a rebellion and a fall, you still have all kinds of beings that are very patiently trying to do something with our hopelessness. You know, and slowly over centuries, millennia, they'll get some little thing, you know, in place. And it's a very tedious process because we're just fraught with fear and anxiety and dread and evil and sin and, you know, and everything else you can think of. Okay. But in spite of that, a mere 200,000 years and we've got a couple of little things. Okay. They have to be very patient. Okay. Well, let's see. It's quite a bit to go to the next one. Maybe we ought to just kind of wrap it up here. Okay, so, you know, just notice how the segue naturally came out. I mean, the fact that we knew that it's like, wait a minute, this is almost starting to sound like mind is innately divine. You know, he starts saying it's, you know, mind. What was those three things again? It was mind, mind planned, mind made, and mind administered. You know, mind is like, well, you know, mind just does everything. You know, you don't need some magical deity notion. Free yourself from the, you know, bondage to this notion that you've got to try to somehow discern what's coming down from above and strike step with it. The universe is just a plane. You know, there's no hierarchy. It's an anarchy. You know, that's the whole Luciferian rabbit hole. You know, it comes into play. Right, equality of mind was one of the battle cries. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Then you're born equal.
Right. I mean, see, you know, and I mean, that's another way of saying your mind, all mind, is innately divine. To say there's equality of mind. It's the same thing. See, remember, equality is a spirit word. Yeah. You know, there's not equality of mind. And with great effort and personal engagement, you can work towards setting up a system of equity of mind. But it's sad to record that there's no one on the planet right now that is wise enough to even begin that process of beginning to set up an equitable system that takes into account the inequality of mind, the inescapable inequality of mind, for no other reason that there's males and females, you know, let alone a million other variations. You know, there is not equality of mind, and to think so is, you know, you're right there with Lucifer.
Okay, back earlier in the chat in this section, mm-hmm. If mind didn't show up until the third source and center.
Mm-hmm.
Father and spirit are out of their mind.
No, remember we addressed that already. They have an internal mind.
So they do have mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
You finally get the third source and center as the absolute mind in place when you're about to create beings that don't have internal mind and need to be externally minded. You know, need to be engaged externally by mind.
Second paragraph under absolute mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mind does not have to be added to pure spirit, for spirit is innately conscious.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that? That second
paragraph. And it doesn't mention the Father right there, or, you know, even the Eternal Son directly. You know, like that I was pointing out. If you go back, let's see, what section is that? The thing to go back to and remind yourself of is, where is that section? Section 6 of paper 6 is where they first introduced that idea of thinking about the mindedness of the Father, the mindedness of the Eternal Son, the mindedness of an adjuster, that whole issue of how that works. And you know, to really get into it a little in a greater detail, you need to flesh out all of, you know, of total deity and start thinking about how the central universe is put together. And, you know, that's okay, that's an advanced thing. But, yeah, so the way I'm approaching it here is just try to give you the basic sense, you know, that, you know, without trying to get into the complex details of it.
Right here, capital D, deity is never mindless.
Right. Yeah, see, and that was, I think I may have even mentioned it there again, didn't I? That sentence about mind is unity, you know, and fundamental quality of deity is unity. You know, see how it just goes hand in hand. You know, but, you know, it's, you know, you go, well, you know, there's deity in a creator son. So are you saying that, that they aren't in the third source and center's personality circuit? Well, you know, I mean, you can't be too simplistic about it. Like I said, it's complicated, all the details, but,
yeah. I get the sense that the term that we're using, mind, contains a lot of subsets of other English words.
I mean, you know, even, you know, the word animal or animation, you know, that's, magnanimous, you know, unanimity, magnanimity, and I mean, all those, you know, that root word is all mind. See, we, you know, so we use it in a very broad way. The revelators are trying to bring some clarity into it, like not calling life animation mind, for instance. You know, even though literally the root of the word animation is, you know, mind in our language, okay, but still, you know, they're trying to, but you can see, even when you try to bring in some greater specificity and clarity, you're still talking about a phenomenon that bridges an infinite divide. You know, on the one side is the unqualified absolute, and on the other side is the deity absolute, and they're infinitely separated. So when you bring this potential out of the universal absolute, this mind energy, you know, it's a very broad spectrum. It's the infinite mind. Okay, so even bringing specificity into it doesn't change the fact that, you know, it's a very broad thing. And then, like I pointed out, on top of that, you have just the literal energy of it, and then there's the activity that's in it, and those are two literally separate things coming from two separate reservoirs. It's really complicated, you know, when you start to really try to understand it in detail. You know, and so a lot of, you know, literally what we're talking about here, this encirclement with the absolute mind as the anchor point, it's that activity of mind that's in a circuit, you know, and feels a mindful gravity. Your activity is drawn to higher thought. The literal energy, you know, is just there. But the activity in that energy system is being drawn, you know, to higher levels. Okay. You know, when you're talking about the absolute mind as the anchor point, you notice that they several times brought up the infinite mind, because it's in a lot of ways you have this reservoir for the activity of mind, the infinite mind. And as you actualize out of that reservoir, you know, and manifest activity of mind, there needs to be an absolute anchor point about which all that activity, you know, revolves. It keeps it all centered, you know, and it's in this sense that it's the third source and center. You can see we're just talking about the source aspect too, but the absolute mind is the center part of third source and center. Yeah, that's that anchor point about which all this activity is focused. Yeah. And then, so the next time they'll bring up just, you know, that that's obviously sort of the last little piece that he hasn't fleshed out yet, is the actual mind gravity issue. So we'll get that next time. And then notice what the section is after that. You know, you bring in something that's also related to mind, reflectivity, and that whole very mysterious aspect comes into play too. Yeah, so we'll I guess we'll get on those next time here. Let's take a moment.